We present What Ho, Jeeves by P.G. Wodehouse. Starring Michael Horden as Jeeves and Richard Briers as Bertie Wooster in Joy in the Morning. Episode 1, Florence Cray.
Even before the events occurred, which I'm about to relate, the hamlet of Steeple Bumpley had come high up on my list of places to be steered sedulously clear of. A picturesque settlement, yes. None more so in all Hampshire. But you remember what the fellow said? It's not a bally bit of use every prospect pleasing if man is vile. And the catch about Steeple Bumpley was that it contained Bumpley Hall, which in its turn contained my Aunt Agatha. She, as you are aware, being my tough aunt, the one who eats broken bottles and conducts human sacrifices by the light of the full moon. Also on the strength were her second husband, the shipping magnate, Percival Lord Warbleston, a bimbo I had never been able to think of without getting goose pimples, his daughter, Lady Florence Cray, to whom I had once been engaged, and his son, Edwin, as pestilential a stripling as ever wore khaki shorts and went spurring, or whatever it is these Boy Scouts do. So you will understand why, despite the fact that old Warbleston's ward was Zenobia Nobby Hopwood, a young pipsqueak with whom my relations were of the matiest, I had always declined my pal Boko Fittleworth's invitation to visit him at the Bijou residence he maintained in those parts. I had had to be similarly firm with Jeeves, who had repeatedly hinted his wish that I should take a cottage there for the summer months. There was, it appeared, admirable fishing in the river, and he is a man who dearly loves to flick the baited hook. But all the while, unsuspected by Bertram, the shadow of Steeple Bumpley was creeping nearer and nearer, and came the day when it tore off its whiskers and pounced. Oddly enough, the morning on which this major disaster occurred was one that found me completely, even exuberantly, in the pink.
Odds bodikins, Jeeves, I'm in rare fettle this a.m. Talk about exulting in my youth, I feel up and doing with a heart for any fate, as Tennyson says.
Longfellow, sir.
Or, if you prefer it, Longfellow, I'm no mood to split hairs. Well, what's the news?
Miss Hopwood called while you were still asleep, sir.
Young Nobby, eh? When did she blow into the great city?
Last night, sir.
Making a long stay?
Only till tomorrow, sir.
Hardly worth sweating up just for the day, I should have thought.
I understand that she came because her ladyship desired her company, sir.
Aunt Agatha? But you don't mean Aunt Agatha's in London?
Merely passing through, sir. Her ladyship is on her way to minister to your cousin, young Master Thomas, who has contracted mumps at his school.
No, really? Foss has got mumps, eh? Serve a little blister right. I hope Aunt Agatha catches them from him.
Very good, sir.
And what had Nobby to say for herself?
She expressed a hope that you might shortly see your way to visiting Steeple Bumpley, sir.
Out of the queue, Jeeves.
Young lady tells me the fish are biting well there just now.
No, Jeeves, I'm sorry. Not even if they bite like serpents do I go near Steeple Bumpley.
Very good, sir.
Was Nobby alone?
No, sir. There was a gentleman with her who spoke as if he were acquainted with you. Miss Hopwood addressed him as Stilton.
Big chap?
Noticeably well developed, sir.
Head like a pumpkin?
Yes, sir. There was a certain resemblance to the vegetable.
It must have been a companion of my earlier years named G. Darcy Cheeseright. In our whimsical way, we used to call him Stilton. Odd him knowing Nobby.
I gathered from the young lady's remarks that Mr. Cheeseright is also a resident of Steeple Bumpley, sir.
Really? It's a small world, Jeeves.
Yes, sir.
I don't know when I've seen a smaller.
Exactly, sir. I myself was in receipt of a telephone communication this morning, sir, from his lordship.
Uncle Percy?
Lord Warbleston, yes, sir.
Golly, what did he want?
His lordship wishes me to go to his office at 11 o'clock this morning, sir.
Whatever for, did he say?
No, sir, merely that the matter was of considerable urgency.
Gosh, he must be in a spot of some kind and needs your counsel.
Maybe so, sir.
I'll bet it so. He must know all about your outstanding gifts. Grab your hat and race along, Jeeves. I shall be agog to learn the inside story. A matter of compromising letters in the possession of gold-digging blondes, I shouldn't wonder.
Very good, sir.
What sort of day is it?
Extremely clement, sir.
Well, sunshine and all that?
Yes, sir.
I thought as much. That must be why I'm feeling so dash fit. Then I think I'll take myself for an airing. Tell me, Jeeves,
Sir?
I'm sorry about not being able to pay a visit to Steeple Bumpley and all that.
It is not important, sir.
No, but can I do anything for you while I'm out? I mean, any little gift you'd like, I mean?
It is extremely kind of you, sir.
Not at all, Jeeves. The sky is the limit. State your desire.
Well, sir, there has recently been published a new and authoritatively annotated edition of the works of the philosopher Spinoza. Since you are so generous, I would appreciate that very much.
You shall have it. It shall be delivered at your door in a plain van without delay. You're sure you've got the name right, Spinoza?
Yes, sir.
It doesn't sound probable, but no doubt you know best. Spinoza, eh? Hmm. Is he the Book Society's choice of the month?
I believe not, sir.
Well, he's the only fellow I ever heard of who wasn't. Righto, I'll see to it instanter.
Thank you very much, sir.
As I made my way to the bookery, I found my thoughts turning, as may be readily imagined, to the sinister manner in which the Steeple Bumpley note was intruding itself like some creeping fog or miasma into my life. First Aunt Agatha, I mean to say, then Nobby and Stilton, and finally Uncle Percy. It only needed now, I felt, a meeting with Florence Cray to put the bally lid on it. Of all the tough babies I've nearly got married to in my time, I've always been inclined to consider Florence Cray the top. Honoria Glossop was hearty, yes. Her laugh was like a steam riveting machine, and from a child she'd been a confirmed backslapper. Madeline Bassett was soppy, true. She had large melting eyes and thought the stars were God's daisy chain. But to do this revolting duo justice, neither had tried to mould me. And that was what Florence Cray had done from the start, seeming to look on Bertram Wooster as a mere chunk of plasticine in the hands of the sculptor. The root of the trouble was that she was one of those intellectual girls steeped to the gills in serious purpose, who are unable to see a male soul without wanting to get behind it and shove. We had scarcely arranged the preliminaries before she was checking up on my reading, giving the bird to Blood on the Banisters, and substituting for it a thing called Types of Ethical Theory. The volume is still on my shelves. Let's open it and see what it has to offer. Ah, yes, here we are. Ah, yes, here we are. Of the two antithetic terms in the Greek philosophy, one only was real and self-subsisting. The other was in itself phenomenal, unreal, having no predicates that held true for two moments together. In short, redeemed from negation only by including indwelling realities appearing through. Right. You will have got the idea, and will, I think, be able to understand why, as I entered the bookshop, I did my best to put out of my mind all thoughts of Lady F. Cray. A moth-eaten old bird stepped forward to attend me.
Can I help you, sir?
Good morning, good morning. Yes, I want a book.
A book, sir?
A book. This is a bookshop, isn't it? A book.
Any particular book, sir?
Spinoza.
Did you say Spinoza, sir?
Spinoza was what I said.
I see. Spinoza. You do not mean the spinning wheel?
No.
It would not be the poisoned pin?
It would not.
With gun and camera in little-known Borneo?
Spinoza.
Spinoza. Oh, dear. I will go and see if we have it in stock, sir. Spinoza. Dear, dear. But possibly this may be what you are requiring. Said to be very clever.
What the devil is it?
Spinoza.
Spindrift. A novel by... Oh, my golly. A novel by...
Bertie! Good gracious! Fancy meeting you in a bookshop of all places.
Florence Cray.
Is it really you, Bertie?
Yes. Hello.
And how are you?
Oh, fine, thanks.
I just went up to London to see my publisher, so I thought I'd look in here to see how Spindrift was selling. What are you buying? Some trash, I suppose?
Well,
Let's have a look. Oh, Bertie. Oh, Bertie. Well, of course, I must autograph it for you.
Thanks very much. Delighted.
Oh, Bertie. Fancy you buying Spindrift.
quite. Well, I didn't want to miss the bally thing, you know. I've been counting the minutes more or less till I could get my hooks on it, what?
I can't tell you how pleased I am. Not just because it's mine, but because I can see that all the trouble I took training your mind was not wasted. You have grown to love good literature.
Oh, rather, yes, absolutely.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes?
I'm afraid we do not appear to have any of the works of Spinoza in stock at present. But we could, of course, order what you require, should you wish us to do so.
No, doesn't matter. No, don't bother. I'll try elsewhere.
Very good, sir. Thank you, sir.
Bertie, this is amazing. Do you rarely read Spinoza?
Oh, rather. When I have a leisure moment, you generally find me curled up with Spinoza's latest.
Well?
Bertie,
you are extraordinary. To think I broke off my engagement to so rare a spirit.
What? Oh, no. You were quite right. A very wise decision. Look, I'm terribly afraid I must be popping. Most fearfully important appointment I've just remembered. Frightfully jolly seeing you again.
We ought to see each other more. We ought to have some long talks.
Oh, rather.
Our developing mind is so fascinating. Why don't you ever come to the hall?
Well, one gets a bit chained to the metropolis, you know.
I should like to show you the reviews of Spindrift. They're wonderful. Edwin is pasting them in an album for me.
Oh, well, I'd love to see them sometime. I'd really love to. Later on, perhaps. Goodbye.
You're forgetting your book. The cash desk is over there.
Oh, yes, thanks. Well, toodaloo. Toodaloo, toodaloo.
And shuddering from brilliantine topknot to rubber shoe sole at the thought of La Craye reviewing our broken engagement in the light of fresh evidence, I fought my way out and set off for Bond Street. The appointment to which I had alluded was with the barman at the Bollinger, and I headed for my destination like a hart streaking towards cooling streams when heated in the chase. 10 minutes and a couple of quick ones later, feeling considerably better, I was standing in the doorway, twirling my umbrella, when my eye was arrested by an odd spectacle. A certain rumminess had begun to manifest itself outside the jeweller's shop across the way. A bloke of furtive aspect was shimmering to and fro on the threshold of the emporium. He was a massive bloke with a pumpkin-shaped head and a face that looked like a slab of pink dough, and as I scanned him more closely, I realised that it was none other than my old friend Stilton Cheesewright. But what he was doing pirouetting outside jewellery bins was more than I could understand. I started across the road with the idea of instituting a probe or quiz, and at the same time he seemed to summon up a sudden burst of resolution. Picking up his feet, he was through the door in a flash, and by the time I entered the establishment, he was leaning over the counter, his gaze riveted on some species of merchandise. I accordingly prodded him in the hindquarters with my umbrella, and he spun round with a sort of guilty bound, like an adagio dancer surprised while watering the cat's milk.
Oh, hello. Bertie. Yes. Bertie. Hello.
Well, Stilton, quite a while since we met.
Yes.
How's the boy?
Oh, all right. How are you?
Fine, thanks. As a matter of fact, I'm feeling unusually fizzy.
That's good. Well, goodbye, Bertie. Nice to have seen you.
I'm not leaving you yet.
Aren't you?
Oh, no. Still here. Jeeves told me you dropped in on me this morning.
Yes.
Accompanied by Nobby.
Yes.
You live at Steeple Bumpley, too, I hear.
Yes.
It's a small world.
Not so very.
Jeeves thinks it is.
Oh. Well, fairly small, perhaps. You're sure I'm not keeping you, Bertie?
No.
I thought you might have a date somewhere.
No, not a thing.
Oh.
Been there long?
Where?
Steeple Bumpley.
Oh. No, not very long.
Like it?
Very much.
What do you do there?
Do?
Come, you know what I mean by do. Boko Fittleworth, for instance, writes wholesome fiction for the masses there. My Uncle Percy relaxes there after the day's shipping magneting. What is your racket? Come along, don't be shy.
Well, I'm a...
Yes?
Nothing. Nothing. I mess about.
Mess about?
Yes. Just mess about. Doing this and that, you know.
I see. Well, flitting lightly over that... Why were you hovering?
Hovering?
Yes.
When?
Just now, outside the shop.
I wasn't hovering.
You were distinctly hovering. You reminded me of a girl Jeeves was speaking about the other day who stood with reluctant feet where the brook and river meet. And when I follow you in, I find you buzz-buzzing into the ear of the assistant, plainly making some furtive purchase. What are you buying, Stilton?
Nothing.
Nothing?
A ring.
What sort of ring?
An engagement ring.
Are you engaged?
Yes. What the devil are you cackling about?
Nothing. Put me down, Stilton. Put me down. Look, I always laugh when people tell me they're engaged.
You have no objection to my being engaged?
No.
Why shouldn't I be engaged?
Oh, quite.
What do you mean by, oh, quite?
I don't know. Oh, quite. At all, quite. Look, I hope you'll be very, very happy.
Thanks.
Oh. Nice girl, I expect?
Yes.
I say, It isn't Nobby, is it?
No. She's engaged to Boko Fittleworth.
I never knew that. He might have told me. So Nobby and Boko have hitched up, have they?
Yes.
Well, well, well. The laughing love god has been properly up on his toes in and around Steeple Bumpley of late. What?
Yes.
Never an idle moment. Day and night shifts. Your betrothed, I take it, is a resident?
Yes.
She has a name?
Yes. It's Cray. Florence Cray.
Oh. What?
What's the matter?
What? Matter? Nothing. Nothing at all. Delighted.
You seem to know her.
Oh, yes, we've met.
I've never heard her speak of you.
No? Fine.
Have you known her long?
A certain time.
Do you know her well?
Pretty well.
When you say pretty well, you mean...
Fairly well. Tolerably well. Not too well.
How did you come to know her?
Her ghastly father married my frightful aunt.
Is Lady Worplesdon your aunt?
And how?
You didn't know her before that. Florence, I mean.
Well, yes, slightly.
I see. Now look here, Wooster.
Still, put me down. When I say slightly, I mean, of course, that we were just acquaintances.
Just acquaintances, eh?
Just.
You simply happened to meet her once or twice?
That's right. You put it in a nutshell.
I see. The reason I ask is that it seemed to me, when I told you she was engaged to me, your manner was peculiar.
It always is before lunch.
You started.
Touch of cramp.
And uttered an exclamation, as if the news had come as an unpleasant shock to you.
Oh, no.
You're sure it didn't?
Not a bit.
In fact, you were mere acquaintances?
That's right. Mere to the core.
Hmm. Still, it's strange that she's never mentioned you.
Yes. Yes. Oh, well. Pip, pip.
It was a grave and thoughtful Bertram Wooster who latchkeyed his way back into the old flat some 30 minutes later. I was feeling a bit weak, too. During the recent scene, I'd been running the gamut of the emotions, as I believe it's called, and that always takes it out of one. My first reaction to Stilton's revelation that he was engaged to the blighted Florence had, of course, been relief. I mean, if she was all tied up with him, the possibility that I was about to be scooped back into the clutches could be considered to have blown a fuse and ceased to impend. Spinoza or no Spinoza, I felt, this let Bertram out. But it's seldom that the Woosters think only of self, and I now found the contemplation of the dreadful thing which had come upon Stilton filling me almost to the brim with pity and terror. It seemed to me that a Save Stilton Cheeseright movement ought to be got underway immediately to rescue the poor misguided blister from his awful predicament. How to do it was, of course, a problem, and many chaps in my place would, I suppose, have been nonplussed. But my brain was working like a buzzsaw this morning, and by the time Jeeves floated back into the residence shortly before lunch, I not only conceived a plan of campaign, but actually put it into effect, as I explained to him. Jeeves?
Sir?
You remember Mr. Cheeseright, who called this morning? I ran into him just now, buying an engagement ring. He is betrothed.
Indeed, sir.
Yes, and you know who too? Lady F. Cray.
Indeed, sir.
And what's so poignant, Jeeves, if that's the word I want, is that he seems to like it. When I quizzed him on the subject, his map took on the colour and expression of a devout tomato. The poor goop loves like a thousand of bricks.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. It reminded me of those lines in the poem, "See how the little, how does it go, tum-tum-ti-tiddly-push." Perhaps you remember the passage.
Alas, regardless of their fate, the little victims play, sir.
Quite sad, Jeeves.
Indubitably, sir.
But he must be saved from himself, nevertheless. Fortunately, I had the situation well in hand.
I am very pleased to hear it, sir.
Would you like to know what steps I've taken?
Very much so, sir.
Then I will tell you. I have written a letter to Miss Hopwood, Jeeves, outlining the situation and urging her to draw Stilton aside and make it clear to him what he is up against. Nobby has known Florence since she was so high, and hence is in the position to assemble all the talking points. However, just in case she overlooks any of them, I have carefully pointed out in my communication all Florence's defects, considered not only as a prospective bride, but as a human being. I can tell you, Jeeves, it was with an agreeable feeling of duty done and a kindly act accomplished that I took the missive round the corner just now and dropped it in the pillar box. Yes, Jeeves? Do I detect a note of disapproval?
Oh, no, sir. It merely occurred to me that it might have been simpler to have communicated the information verbally to Miss Hopwood when you go down to Steeple Bumpley tomorrow, sir.
Jeeves, I'm not going down to Steeple Bumpley tomorrow.
Very good, sir.
Not to the slightest extent whatsoever.
Very good, sir.
Quite. I'm glad they're settled. Now then, tell me about Uncle Percy. You saw him?
Yes, sir.
Was he in the market for aid and counsel?
Yes, sir.
I knew I was right. What was it? Blackmail? Does he want you to pinch damaging correspondence from the Peroxided? Has some quick-thinking adventuress got him in her toils?
Oh, no, sir. I'm sure his lordship's private life is above reproach.
I'm not so dash sure about that. It depends what you call above reproach. When I was 15, he found me smoking one of his special cigars in the stable yard and chased me a mile across difficult country with a hunting crop. To my mind, a man capable of that would be capable of anything. Well, if it wasn't blackmail, what was the trouble?
His lordship finds himself in a somewhat difficult position, sir.
What's biting him? Well, come along, Jeeves. Are you coming over all discreet? You look like a parrot who's been offered half a banana by a stranger of whose bona fides it is not convinced.
Well, sir...
You know me, Jeeves, the silent tomb.
Well then, sir, his lordship informs me that he is in the process of concluding the final details of a business agreement of great delicacy and importance.
Did he mention what the BA of Great D&I was?
No, sir, but of course one has read the papers.
I haven't.
You do not study the financial pages, sir?
Never give them a glance.
They've been devoting considerable space of late to rumours of a merger or combination, which is said to be impending between his lordship's Pink Funnel line and an equally prominent shipping firm of the United States of America, sir. It is undoubtedly to this that his lordship was guardedly alluding.
Going to team up, are they, these nautical tycoons?
So it is supposed, sir.
Well, God bless them.
Yes, sir.
I mean, why shouldn't they?
Exactly, sir.
Well, what's his difficulty?
Somewhat... tense situation has arisen, sir. The negotiations would appear to have arrived at a point where it is essential that his lordship shall meet and confer with the gentleman conducting the poor parleys on behalf of the American organization.
Ah.
On the other hand, it is vital that he shall not be seen in the latter's society, for such a meeting would instantly be accepted in the city as conclusive proof that the fusion of interests was about to take place with... immediate reactions on the respective shares of the two companies.
Oh, I'm beginning to see daylight. They would go up, you mean?
A sharp rise would be inevitable, sir.
And Uncle Percy views such a prospect with concern?
Yes, sir.
His idea being to collect a parcel cheap before the many-headed can horn in and spoil the market?
Precisely, sir. Rem acu tetigisti.
Rem?
Acu tetigisti, sir. A Latin expression. Literally, it means you have touched the matter with a needle, but a more idiomatic rendering would be...
put my finger on the nub.
Exactly, sir.
Yes, I get it now. You have clarified the situation. Getting right down to it, these two old buzzards have got a foregather in secret and require a hideout.
Precisely, sir. And, of course, the movements of both gentlemen are being closely watched by representatives of the financial press...
I suppose this mystic stuff goes on all the time in the world of commerce.
Yes, sir.
One understands and sympathizes.
Certainly, sir.
Though one dislikes the idea of Uncle Percy getting any richer. Already he has the stuff in gobs. However, bearing in mind the fact that he is an uncle by marriage, I suppose one ought to espouse his cause. Had you anything to suggest?
Yes, sir.
I bet you had.
It occurred to me that such a meeting might well take place unobserved, sir, if the two parties were to arrange to come together beneath the roof of some remote country cottage.
Hmm. You mean a cottage in the country somewhere?
You have interpreted me exactly, sir.
Well, I don't think much of that, Jeeves. You must be losing your grip.
Sir?
Well, to name but one objection, how can you go to the owner of a country cottage, whom you don't know from Adam, and ask him to let you and your pals plot in the parlour?
It would be necessary, of course, sir, that the proprietor of the establishment should be no stranger to his lordship.
Well, he would have to be somebody who knew Uncle Percy, you mean?
Precisely, sir.
Jeeves, my dear old soul, don't you see that makes it still worse? I use the beam. In that case, the chap says to himself, hello, old Warpleston having secret meetings with mystery men. Hello, hello, what's all this? I'll bet this means that merger I've been reading about so much is going to come off. And he nips out and phones his broker to start buying those shares and to keep buying till he's blue in the face, thus wrecking all Uncle Percy's carefully laid plans and rendering him sicker than mud. You follow me, Jeeves?
Completely, sir. I had not overlooked that contingency. The occupant of the cottage would, of course, have to be some gentleman whom his lordship could trust.
Such as?
Well, yourself, sir.
But... sorry to have to rub it in like this, but it's only kind to remove the scales from your eyes. I haven't got a cottage.
Yes, sir.
I don't get you, Jeeves.
His lordship is placing one of his own at your disposal, sir. He instructed me to say that he wishes you to proceed tomorrow to Steeple Bumpley.
Steeple?
Where you will find a small but compact residence awaiting you in perfect condition for immediate occupation. It is delightfully situated, not far from the river.
Jeeves!
Sir?
You have done the dirty on me.
Oh, no, sir.
Oh, yes, Jeeves. I don't suppose there are more than a handful of men in the W1 postal district of London swifter to spot Oompus Boompus than Bertrand Wooster. That word river, Jeeves, tells me all.
I'm sorry, sir. It seemed the only solution of his lordship's problem. I feel sure, sir, that when you see the residence in question, your prejudice against Steeple Bumpley will be overcome. Furthermore, you will be quite adjacent to Mr. Fittleworth.
And you will be quite adjacent to your fish.
Why, yes, sir. The point had not occurred to me, but now that you mention it, that is certainly so. I should find a little fishing most enjoyable. If you could spare me from time to time while we are at Wee Nook.
Did you say Wee Nook?
Yes, sir.
Spelled, I'll warrant, with an E?
Yes, sir.
Well, listen to me, Jeeves. The thing's off. You understand? Off. Off. Spelled with an O and two Fs. I'm dashed if I'm going to be made a... what's the word?
Sir?
Cat's paw. Why cat's paw? I mean, what have cats got to do with it?
The expression derives from the old story of the cat, the monkey, and the chestnuts, sir. It appears...
Skip it, Jeeves. This is no time for chewing the fat about the animal kingdom. And if it's the story about where the monkey put the nuts, I know it, and it's very vulgar. Getting back to the rays, I absolutely, positively, and totally refuse to go to Steeple Bumpley.
Well, of course, sir, it is perfectly open to you to adopt the attitude you indicate, but... your uncle...
Uncle Percy would look askance, you mean?
Yes, sir.
And might report the matter to Aunt Agatha?
Precisely, sir. And her ladyship, when incensed, can be noticeably unpleasant.
Rem acu tetigisti. All right. Start packing.
In Florence Cray, the parts were played as follows. Jeeves, Michael Horden, Bertie Wooster, Richard Briers, Florence Cray, Bronwyn Williams, Stilton Cheesewright, Michael Kilgariff, the salesman, Bruce Bennett. Joy in the Morning by P.G. Woodhouse was adapted for radio by Chris Miller. The program was produced by Simon Brett.